Okay, good. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the Qigong. I'm sure you did. If you enjoy Qigong at all, because she teaches it with such fullness of heart. So, I'm talking again. Okay. So we're on with the show here. I gotta remember. It's gotta be something about boundaries in Okay, let's see. Where do I want to go here? I think instead of talking about boundaries, which is a differentiation, and the splitting, the separating of life, really, that's what a boundary does. It separates it into life of the mind, and then tries to gain that which it perceives it needs and wants. That's sort of the way boundaries work. It also provides a knowing, or allows us to know something about the different objects, and to use that knowing for our own self acclaim, if we so wish, or just to become deeply integrated into the knowing facts of the world around us. In any case, whichever way we pursue the knowing, or the division for that matter, we've lost what's essential. We've lost what's essential. And if you know what's essential, for instance, wonder, WONDER, not WANDER. Wonder, if you know, if you get a sense of the incomprehensibility of life, that it's completely inconceivable, that's the state of wonder. That's what awareness lives within. Awareness, since it doesn't hold form as itself, it holds form, but it doesn't hold form as itself. And therefore, it stays in a state of wonder at all time. At all time. And I mean, if you think it, you can substitute mystery for wonder if you wish. And there's something about mystery that entices us forward. It's something many of us like to watch mystery stories on mystery shows, because there's a part, the not knowing draws something out of us that knowing doesn't. And so the willingness to move with that not knowing, which is the state of wonder, isn't, it can be fearful, it can be threatening, but once you orient yourself to wonder, it's anything but. It's really a delightful abiding place. So there are signs that we are moving more into that wonder, and there are signs that we are moving away from it. When you really want to know more and more and more and more, you're moving away from the wonder, which doesn't know. It's not that wonder doesn't have access to knowing. If it needs to, it will. Doesn't forget what the objects of the world are. It just doesn't invest in those as being an everyday excursion. So you have all the knowing you ever had, and you live within a state of not knowing, if that makes any sense at all. So what does it look like when we've healed to the boundaries of our differentiation? When we stopped dividing ourselves into pieces, basically. Well, what it looks like is alignment. We begin to realign ourselves. And if you've ever been to a chiropractor, you know, and you have your back out, and they'll work on you and manipulate you, and perhaps you'll feel really in line when you get up off that table. But how long does that last? You go back out and apply the same pressures to your body that you were prior to the alignment, and you're out of alignment again and back on the table. Well, that's kind of what a retreat can do. It can bring you into a simulated alignment that'll last for a while until your mind releases itself back to where it really wants to go, which is in disarray. It thrives in being unaligned and being on the chiropractic table, which is too bad, but it's also very typical. And so doing retreats periodically help us to get back, or to at least refresh our awareness and our approach to reality once more. It's like sitting, you know, where you sit and you, for however long you sit, then you get up and you're almost instantaneously back into the minds, invested in the mind, invested in the knowing, invested in the division, invested in all of it again. And it's too bad. You'd think that the meditation would last a little longer than the time that we spend in it, that it would play itself out. And so, but the strength or the tenacity of the mind to gain hold and dominance again is the conditioned fact that we have lived under its guidance for eons. And now we're trying to explore a way out. It just doesn't let you go off on a different tangent without putting up a fight or struggle to bring you back in. So the only thing that's a qualified answer to that struggle is patience. You can't let yourself become impatient, because then you are a derivation of the very mind that it's trying to transcend. And there are indications that you're doing that. Impatience is one. Closed-heartedness is another. All the anti-paramis, those qualities that stand in contradiction to the qualities of heart and closeness and inclusivity and all the things we talked some about. When you find yourself moving in that direction, you can be sure that you're in a direction counter to true abidance, to true non-differentiation. So you're starting to let those cues connect us. Okay, wait a second now. Stop, stop, stop. That's very hard to do. Just the stopping, just enough, enough. Okay, stop. What's going on here? Let me see what's going on. Where am I amiss? Where am I differentiating? Where am I boundaried? Just stopping, asking the relevant questions. And this is very helpful, at least it has been to me, and I think it could be to most of you, is to have the Dharma play, have it. Don't be, if you're too serious, that the seriousness doesn't come from the Dharma. It comes from your mind. And you start learning Dharma mind. Okay, Dharma, right? And there's a playfulness in Dharma. You play within many different expressions. You venture forth until you find an interesting Dharma point. Then you bring it in, because it's fun to explore other points that you don't know and to expand your wisdom and to change your view ever so lightly. And to question it. You know, if you can't question the Dharma because you're afraid of the wrong answer, don't go that direction. I used to, when I was more reactive than I am now, thank God, I would be in a reactivity and I would just stop and say, okay, this reactivity is either true or that which holds the reactivity is true. And I don't know which it is, but I'm going to test it. And I said, okay, Dharma, you either show up or I'm out of here. I'm going to get back to where I used to be. You don't want to see that part of me. So I would just sit And I can say, okay, now I've got to give it a chance. You know, I can't call it forth and then betray what it needs to come forth. So I just let it just be quiet, and then it would show up on its own. I wouldn't force it there. I wouldn't whip it into place. Yeah, I just did it. The old way of calling it back never left me. And so there's a beautiful simpatico. There's a beautiful simplicity to it. There's a beautiful calling back. There's a playfulness. And you start getting suspicious of your views, your fixed views, or becoming an ideologue, you know, where you're only one, whatever the Buddha said is the only way. You say, rubbish. The Dharma is even out there as a totality of all things. In all expressions of life, you can find a Dharma resolution. In all wisdom of life, you can find the Dharma stimulation. And you start moving into different, I did, I start moving into different areas that allow me to explore those different possibilities. Listening to different teachers, ones who are, you might judge as being less practiced than you. Doesn't matter, because they're saying something from somewhere, and sometimes they see something very differently than you and all your years of experience and wisdom missed. And you go, oh yeah, wow, okay, I got it. I always, and then you bow, you know, you just say thanks, thank you for that. And then I go into other traditions. I've done Zen practice. I've done Tibetan. I've been with Tibetan teachers. I've done Advaita, different Advaita expressions of Dharma. Always learn something. Always learn something. Because the way they frame it wasn't from the traditional insight tradition. And if I can't move within their expression, I'm cutting something off in myself and becoming ideological. Why can't I just open to what they're saying? It's not going to kill me. I'll learn something, you know. So staying fluid and staying mobile, and flexible in your Dharma. Different cultures, different expressions, different ideas. This is how I, because I'm not sure it works for all people, because it's not usually the way most people work. That's how I kept it alive, and I invite you to do the same. This is how we stay in alignment. When you're alive, you feel in alignment. You know, when you're not, when you're mind driven, you don't feel like you're in alignment. You feel like life is a drag, you know, and you're continual uphill pull. And so it's very important, I think, to expose ourselves to new Dharma ideas. But the way it really unfolds in all of us is that you have a certain wisdom after a while, you gain a certain, and then the wisdom has an insight, and the insight shows you a particular, a different expression than what you have known it to be. That's what an insight is a different way of looking at an old form or expression that you've taken to be a certain way, but it's showing itself to be a certain other way. And then when you enter that and realize it, something else shows up along those same lines or in a different way of looking. And insight, wisdom, feeds upon itself, opening farther and farther and farther, farthest reaches. I never want to stop. I want to go. You can't see the horizon as far as I want to go. I don't ever want to stop. Why would you stop? I can't imagine why you would want to stop. So you just keep going. You're growing all the time. You grow from all sources. And you don't become arrogant. If arrogant comes in, you know you're in the wrong direction, going backward from open expression of aliveness. So arrogance doesn't have a place, just doesn't. Humility has a huge place. That's what bowing to everything is. It's the act of submission to that which teaches. So I want to talk, and what the point of this talk is to see how it is that we talk ourselves out of alignment with four or five different ways that our spiritual practice can become misaligned, and we don't know it. And one of them is adhering to a procedure, to something that's mechanical. And it's scientific, you know, and you've talked to others, and say, oh yeah, this is a really good method, you know, it took me, blah, 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 and I saw this and that and all of that. And so you say, okay, well, I'll follow that procedure. So you start doing what the teacher of that tradition tells you to do, and it becomes mechanical in you. You're not really alive within it. It's just, you know, back to the breath, and then letting the mind wander back to the breath, wandering mind back to the breath. And it's so repetitious for me, it was, that I was losing my spirit. I could feel it, feeling the spirit get drained within the mechanics. And then I opened to wonder. And suddenly what I was doing was alive in and of itself. I wasn't seeking to be alive. I was living in aliveness, living life, living aliveness. And that's a whole different ballgame in terms of the introspection and the way forward. And, you know, it's like, whoa, this is, and you know you're in the middle of something that I don't know how I got here. I have to figure it out. I have to figure out what I need to release and surrender and to in order to have this as my self-reference rather than the mind as my self-reference. And that didn't come mechanically. Mechanics will take you, I'm not throwing a baby out with the bathwater. There are positive qualities that occur from mechanics. One is the guidance of your attention, so that you're not just moving with every thought, but there's a stability of attention that science can provide you. Just do this, follow this, let all the thoughts go, stay here, you know, and pretty soon the mind develops its ability to rest on an object, which is tremendous, because if you can't rest your attention on an object, you can't see the object. And if you can't see the object, you have no idea what it is, only a mental frame of reference. And when you can see it, what it really is, concepts begin to dissipate from it, begin to leave it. And when concepts leave it, it's left with its bare essence. Now, you may not get to that level because there's a lot of internal difficulty in maintaining yourself at that level, because every thought, I mean, it just takes one thought believed for you to be back into your mind completely. And so you can see that there's a lot of work to do with thought, knowing what thought is, and with the emotions, especially deep ingrained reactive patterns, which keep bringing us back down into the middle. So but what happens is that when you experience wonder, you begin to realize that we're trying to see beyond the mind, not use the mind. You can't use the mind to see beyond the mind. It's just doesn't work that way. You've got to set the mind down, release the mind for what it is, thank it. Thank you, mind. Now leave me alone. If it were only that easy. And but you get a sense of where aliveness is, where alignment lies. And it ain't in the mechanical. We love it to be in the mechanical, then all I have to do is follow suit. So there's no blueprint for awakening. That's what I'm trying to say. And therefore, it's individually determined. It's individually referenced, inch by inch, looking, seeking, realizing, asking further questions. It is the Braille system of awakening. Touching each letter of each word. And then still more, we have to release our knowing in order to plunge ourselves into wonder and seeing. And all of this becomes obvious when you are along the way. You'll hear, like, you know, I just heard from probably a Zen teacher about not knowing. I said, why would I not want to know? What does that have to do with it? But it started and initiated a curiosity. And I said, okay, what's wrong with knowing? You see, that you start like you're completely naive, which you are, if you're, instead of reading about it and then having that intellectual idea and say, oh, I know all about not knowing now, while you know, I know. Oh, you see, you keep listening for those mutually exclusive, I know all about not knowing. There's something, there's a collision point there. Not knowing has an emptying feeling. It's an empty, but it doesn't keep you from reading about what, you know, where people are going and what the, and you go, well, that's interesting. I never thought of that before. But I mean, so let me stop thinking and know what it is. You learn how to get into the wonderment and set the other aside. If you want to broaden out your wisdom so that it reaches far. So the first misaligned way we use spiritual practice is using it as a procedure, as a methodology. I'm starting here, I'm going there. Okay. Like, pack my lunch, I'm out of here. Well, good luck. Doesn't quite work that way. Okay. The other, misaligned way is thinking that life is something happening to us. This is really, you know, it is, this is one of the real entrenched ways that division has happened to us. My life here inside of me and the life outside of me are two different things. We never hook them together. So what happens when we don't hook them together is that you feel like you're incomplete because you've left half of yourself out. That's hello. I've left all of life outside except the life that's inside out of me. I've cut myself off from it. And so there's a sense in most of us, if we look deeply enough, a sense of incompletion. Something's not right. It comes in different forms. Like, is this all there is? That's another expression of it. Like, no wonder people commit suicide, because is it worth living? It's like taking the period at the end of the sentence as the whole book. It's nothing. It's just so. That irritated me because I couldn't seem to get over the sense that I'm feeling incomplete. Now, part of it, I thought, was the fact that I didn't believe in myself strongly enough to have the stability not to identify and think there's something wrong with me. That's why I feel incomplete. It's me. It's not what I've left out, off or away or divided myself from. It's me. So we have to do a lot of investigation to know that it's not me, and it's not. Now, what happens is that, you know, we think that the greatest view you can have for a separated life, you don't know you're separated when you're asking this question, is it was what's the meaning of my life? What's the purpose? What's the purpose and meaning? And we set out ourselves to develop a pathway to what we think is the most meaningful. Well, lo and behold, the reason we're searching for meaning, we're really searching for completion. The reason life needs a meaning is because it feels incomplete. And so it's trying to develop something that's very praiseworthy, accomplish it, and then that will, of course, will make me complete. Or we get sidetracked complete in a completely different direction and try to make life work on its own terms and fulfill itself through the pursuit of desire and avoidance of fear. That's another way of doing it. But what happens when you experience the union of alignment is that that question falls away. What is meaning? Because what we've been searching for is the part we've left behind. And when you find that other part, that fullness of being, it doesn't feel like anything's missing. In fact, everything you do is significant. It's not one thing is more significant than another. Everything has, listen to this, everything has equal significance. Because everything is of everything else. Everything is. It all arises together in complete union. It's undifferentiated. And when you understand that, when you go, oh, yes, you can do things, or no, you can live in a cave and meditate if you so wish. The point is that the activities are all meaningful because they're happening within the whole. And therefore, they're not differentiated, and they're not side-taking, and they're not quarrelsome, and they're not in conflict with anything else. And there's a beautiful feeling of simpatico in that. And so you think, okay, it's time for me to retire, you retire. But your life doesn't just end. It's like filled. And, oh, I think I'll teach this, or I think I'll do that, or I think I'll, you know, this and that. But it isn't, it's changed. And the landscape has changed. But the meaning has stayed as important as it ever was, the wholeness of meaning. Not a lot of people understand that. And makes all the difference in terms of your life. You're not searching for what I need to do next kind of thing. You know, like that you're off on some island and the boats are passing you and you don't know how to, all that stuff. See, because the root is that we are life. All of life. We are all of life. We are in union, whether we know it or acknowledge it or not. Even when we cut ourselves off through division, that is a statement of union. Okay, you have to understand the perspectives I'm playing with now. So that's important. And not thinking that life is something happening to us and that we have to join it somehow. it's so ridiculous. But I know the syndrome. I've been there. Okay, here's a third one of how we misalign this. And believe me, this is stubborn. This is one that doesn't just give way. And that is claiming awareness as personally possessed, my awareness. Right? So my side of division has awareness, and it looks like your side of division doesn't have awareness. I own the awareness of my, and I'm aware, right? Forget that. Awareness is fundamental to existence. Awareness is, if there's a, it is existence. It is life. Unformed. Potentially always available. But we have to find our way to it because it takes one word or one thought believed, and your heaven and earth are split infinitely far apart. I think Christ said something. He said, The kingdom of heaven is spread across the land, but we do not have eyes to see it. He just said the same thing I said. And that is, it's there. But we just don't, we believe more in our separation. We want our separation. We believe our life will be more satisfied when we're the directors of it. And so to hell with heaven. I'll take my life of separation. But it's there. So awareness is fundamental to existence itself. This is so important. In fact, you'll get to a certain point. I reached it. I can remember almost the, I remember where it was. I remember when. And I thought, God, everything I've done in Dharma has been my own empowerment, has been done because of my willpower, because of my, under my direction, under my control, under my forced forced power, under my power. I don't know what, and I said, well, I don't even know what it would look like to open up, really open, beyond my empowerment, my self-empowerment. But that was very hard, because everything that I was up until that point, in all things, academic, social, everything, was due to my empowerment, was due to I forced my way forward. And this I couldn't do. And it was when I learned or intimated that awareness was not under my control. And I'll tell you how I did that. And I share this because it was very powerful when I realized. And that is when you're sitting and you're following, you know, your breath or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden you're not there. I asked myself, did I ask myself to leave? No, that leaving was not under my direction. And then I would wake back up and I said, well, was that something I did? And I said, no, I can't claim that I woke myself up either. No, I can't claim forcing myself to sleep, and I can't claim waking up. How is this under my, there's something there that is not under my empowerment. It's not being driven by my need or want or anything. So with that and other explorations, I began to know that awareness is what holds everything, but itself is not of everything. It holds thought, but it is not a thought itself. And that way you could, when you open to it, you can see, and if you're really open to it and you're quiet, because that's what it really needs to be fully blown, to be in full array, then all form is seen. It is amazing. I'm still amazed. You can hear it in my voice. That from awareness, within awareness, not from in awareness, a thought, like it's like a, you see it all. Just come, you don't see it. Awareness sees it. Okay? But it's seen, and it's because it holds it all. It knows it all. It sees it all. It's really amazing. So then extinguishment of our conditioning happens pretty quickly. Sometimes the conditioning requires more psychological time. So I'm not going to say that everything just goes away real quickly. It doesn't. A lot of it does. Some of it doesn't. And that something requires your patience, your perseverance, and your willingness to be humble, because you're right back when the mind's got you where you were at age 5 or whatever time that development occurred. So it's not anyone's possession. That's the point I want to make. It's unaffected by our will and effort. Unaffected by, in fact, it's covered over by our will and effort, because it takes a lot of thought and self-management in order, you know, will and self-empowerment take a lot of thought. And so thought covers over awareness. Awareness doesn't try to get through. It waits for you to stop thinking. It doesn't disturb anything. Awareness doesn't listen to that, because that's an important point. It doesn't disturb anything. It waits for you to be undisturbed, and then it'll show itself. And that's why it takes so long, is because we think we can undisturb ourselves, which is really more self-disturbance. Anytime you think you have the upper hand in this thing, you're at the end of the line. Remember that it's not of anyone's ownership. No one can bestow awareness upon you. And if they say so, get out of there really quick. Save your money and your time, and just be thankful that you escaped as quickly as you did. Because people will try. There's a time in this that you can make an egoic decision to play it against others. As vicious as that sounds, it is done. And you can find a lot of gurus who are in that possession or in that, aligned with that purpose. Now, I know, you know, mindfulness was of your, you think, you know, when I'm putting my will, mindfulness, great. You don't really realize that when you are willfully mindful, you're actually undermining the ability for that to be sustained. You don't see that. You think it's your will that's having it show up at all. So you have to learn your way out of your self-manipulation into alignment. And then you have to realize that awareness doesn't show up if there's thought. You will go to thought because you are made of thought. You want to keep thinking. And so you will go to thought before you go to awareness. It doesn't offer you the individuality and individual separation that thought does. So you'll keep self-selecting your way out of awareness into thought, because it provides, and don't pretend that it doesn't, the sense of self-assurance that we still need well into this path. All right? So don't play. Don't lie to yourself. Just see what happens and then change course if it's not what you so wish for your spiritual journey. Okay, so another way we stay misaligned is by fracturing time into the endless series of past, present, and future moments. Time is seamless. All time is your time. And if you want to go past, present, and future, you think, well, what's wrong with present? Well, because it's shoved between a rock of future and a hard place of the past. And so I've got to really try to stay in the present. Well, you can't do that, because you trying to stay in the present when the sense of you requires time in order to exist. That's another subject, but I just want to land it on you. Your existence depends upon fracturing time into past, present, and future. It gives us a sense of three-dimensionality. I know where I've been. I know where I'm going. That gives us a sense of being ourselves. So you can't work it that way. If you work in discrete moments of time, hoping for a better future and expecting a better present and all of that, you're just feeding the sense of self. It's codependently arising. You are codependently arising in your reminiscence and in your worry and in your daydreaming and in your hoping and in your begrudging and in your reminiscing and in your, I could go on and on. That's how much hold it has on us. Time holds us bound to an unforgiving past, an anxious future, and an unfulfilled present. Now find your way through that. When you do these things individually and you look at them and go, oh yeah, and then the wisdom begins to bloom within each one of these things, it doesn't feel like you've got this garbage dump that you've got to wade through of all the things that you're fracturing time and you're owning awareness and you're on and on. It just moves. And so you can remember what it was like before you knew that, but the sense of being free from it is very much felt and understood. So the final misalignment that I want to talk about is a series of mistakes that we make. You know, when I lay out, which I try to do regularly, and people get sick of it, but I don't care because you need to hear where we're heading in a spiritual journey. And untethered, unobstructed essence has certain qualities. And we bring, the mind has other qualities that it puts it on it, since you see those other qualities acting in your life, you know that they're conceptual overlays to the truth of your being. So you start looking for the conceptual derivation that has led you to believe what you're believing, like we've been looking at boundaries. And if you spend time with it, I don't mean in a weekend, but if you spend time looking at your boundaries, you'll be able to see them because awareness shows you all form expressions of form. And so if you're quiet enough and you want it, and you want, I mean, you're curious and really long to understand, you'll start seeing how you divide yourself up. You'll see it. And that means it's a concept. That means it's an add-on to the basic fundamental essence, and you will want to release it. Release it. And then you'll have raw essence, and you'll see the difference. But you have to want to release it. And when you're at the point where you start releasing it and you see that you're releasing yourself by releasing that next step, you may pull back and reconsider. Eventually, if you stay with it, your heart is stronger than your avoidance and it'll pull you in. But it could take some time. So, seeing motion where there's only stillness, you know that motion must be conceptual because reality at its base is still. It's motionless, right? So, okay, what is motion then? Now you're going to ask that. You wonder what time is because it doesn't hold time. It's timeless. So, I see. It's the thought that holds time. And I can explain that, and I'll explain that at another time maybe. But basically, again, it's an add-on. I don't have time to go through what each add-on is, but you can do it. And it's very simple. I mean, there isn't anything more simple than basic reality. And how simple is my practice? How complex? Do I have to do 100,000 prostrations and 10,000 but mala beads and, wait a minute. This is too mechanical. This is too mechanical. Where is that wonder in this moment? I lived with that for, I, Where is the wonder in this moment? See, you're testing the Dharma, okay? If it's always with me, Rodney said, where is it now? I'm going to give it one chance. I used to do this, but I have to give it a fair chance. I can't get angry at it and anxious and walk away and say it failed me when I didn't give it a chance. So you have to be quiet. I knew that that was how to give it a chance. And it never let me escape. Never. No one is doing this to us, people. We're doing it to ourselves. And that's why it takes you to want to relinquish what it's doing to you in order to go forward. It's that simple. No one can argue for you to go forward. No one can do it for you. It has to be of your own time because it's your own obstruction. Who else is going to, how else can you get over your own obstruction? You can't let somebody else, nobody else would do it. They have their own obstruction. So it's that infinite patience that's necessary and comprehension and understanding. And love of the truth. God, I can't believe how shallow that parami is, truthfulness, the love of the truth. People just would rather deny and not know the truth than to love what's there, even if it's difficult. Keep that above all else. Okay, all, I'll shut up now. So we will, let's see, take a half an hour walking, and then we'll come back, and we'll do a guided inquiry at 3 o'clock. Okay, be well.